Caught Offside presents a World Cup group preview
they're gonna win the World Cup.
With Andrew Gunley and JJ Devaney.
Oh, yes! It's Caught Offside from the Upper West Side of Manhattan. Andrew Gunling and JJ Devaney, and here we go. Here we go.
4 years on from when we first did this,
That's right. We are back. It's time to drum up all that phony excitement with the U.S. not being involved. I promise. I swear I'm going to be
This is fun.
You're right. I am actually. It started out as phony excitement, but I think once I started actually doing all the research and starting to look into all the teams, I am really truly starting to get excited about this.
And you know what's exciting for me? As much as I think I know, there's so much that I don't know about these teams.
I know.
And it takes me back to my childhood where I remember a World Cup because of the random guy who jumped up out of nowhere, grabbed the tournament by the scruff of the neck, and became someone I remember that World Cup for being great.
So here we go. We're going to be going through people who were with us from day one. First of all, you rule, because there's not many of you. But we did. This is pretty much how the podcast started. We were birthed out of the 2014 World Cup.
What an image.
Yeah, we exploded from the womb of podcastdom. And we did regular podcasts, but ultimately we were created as a thing to get everybody here at ESPN New York.
We made our bones with the World Cup
right.
preview.
And so we did all our group preview podcasts. And so this is like really nostalgic, right? Here we are back again. We're still here doing this podcast at this next World Cup.
Someone's been asleep at the wheel.
We've got all these group previews ready for you. Obviously, today we'll be starting with Group A. Look for Group B tomorrow, and we'll continue to each week give you two group previews leading you straight up to the World Cup. We should say each of these weeks, in addition to our group preview podcast, we will also be doing our regular podcast where we talk about whatever's going on in the world of soccer. Of course, a Champions League final recap in next week's podcast. But yes, it's World Cup time. It's time for everybody to start wrapping their minds around the fact that we are here. It is happening, with or without the United States of America, Italy, Netherlands, Ireland, Chile, etc., etc.
And by the way, the way I feel about these group previews is to tickle the taste buds, get everybody in the mood for some soccer. Look, let's be honest, the World Cup defines the game, really, when you think about it. And we're not looking to be the definitive World Cup preview. What we're looking to do is get you going, get you ready, get you pumped, get you juiced up for it.
Yeah, and I'm going to put two disclaimers out there ahead of time, all right? So I just want everybody to bear with me for a second. The first disclaimer is, I know I made a little joke about the U.S. at the start of this. That's probably, like, talking about the World Cup is going to be hard for an American fan. So it's going to come up again. My sorrow is going to rub off on all of you at different times.
Anyone,
it's going to hit me in waves, so just know that. Just know that and be prepared for it.
Anyone who listens to us knows about your sorrow, your deep, unending, dark.
Well, I'm going to try, but I can only try so hard. And then the other disclaimer that I want to put out there is, even under the best of circumstances, when I'm talking about players that I know like the back of my hand from leagues that I watch every single weekend of my life, for whatever reason, people I see on Twitter still will make fun of me for the way I pronounce things. Well, now we're going down a dark path with some names that I'm not that familiar with. So if you want to make fun of me, have at it, but it's going
to
happen.
A guy got onto us about the way we say Firmino.
I don't know, man.
So you said Bobby.
You talk to five people with some of these names and you'll get five different pronunciations. That doesn't mean that anybody knows the information less, but some of these names are just subject to different pronunciations.
You understand it. You've added your caveat. May I add mine?
Of course.
I want everybody to look at your circle of soccer friends, the guys you're going to be watching the World Cup with, right? Remember the things they say now. Because mid-June, when there's a dark horse that does something or a player that emerges from out of nowhere, seemingly, and your friend goes, I told you guys, make sure you hold him accountable because he probably didn't tell you.
You're right.
All right? We know nothing. We are guessing. We're going on the best evidence we have, but the tournament is the tournament.
And it's what makes the tournament as fun as it is.
Correct.
So here we go. People who will remember our last time around on our World Cup group previews, we're going to do something that we did then once again. give you a flavor of each of these countries from a musical perspective. We've gone through and we found what the number one songs are currently for each country involved in the World Cup. And as kind of an intro way into discussing that team, we will play that song for you. You ready to start?
Yeah.
Where else to start but the host nation? And the number one song right now, according to the YouTube charts in Russia, comes from Matrang.
Medusa, 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 Medusa.
The host nation, JJ. They've waited many years for this, and now they are the center of the soccer universe. So here we go. We'll ask a bunch of questions and run through this for each of these teams. The first thing I want to ask about Russia is, who are some of these key players that people need to start educating themselves with?
I mean, look, a lot of them play domestically, so we're not that familiar with them. But we hear the rumors, and we heard the rumors about Fedor Smolov, who appears to be their goal-scoring threat. The goalkeeper, Igor Akinfeev.
Who, that's the name that I think fans will be most familiar with,
right,
from this Russian team. Because he really, if you remember back in the 2008 European Championships, he was phenomenal for Russia. And he's still, here he is, 10 years later, he's still their number one keeper.
By the way, we'll get to another one who has survived from that tournament later on. But these are the guys that jump out. For me, Smolov is key because top scorer in the Russian Premier League in 15-16 and 16-17, the second highest goal scorer this season. Now that sounds amazing, but there's two caveats there. It's a weird one for him because really he's quite late in his career that he's put together this resume of goal scoring. And also the fact is that the Russian league, the, how shall I put it? It's almost half the Premier League total. 15 or 16 goals and you are absolute dynamite in the Russian league. He attracted the attention of West Ham in January. And to me, if they have any chance of creating something and doing something in this group, his goals are going to be key. And, you know, he's the guy who said to FIFA, this group isn't that strong. Like, he said those words. Russia will come into this, despite what you saw in the Confederations Cup, with a little bit of arrogance. Those would be my three key players.
Yeah, a couple of the ones that I have here, Alexei Maranchuk of Lokomotiv Moscow. 4 goals and 14 international appearances for Russia. So he's still relatively new to the side, but it seems like he's integrated pretty nicely. Alexander Golovin is another one who's, he's actually been involved in rumors linking him with a possible move to Newcastle.
Right.
So he's someone you may want to keep an eye on. Some people remember him from a really strong performance against Arsenal in the Europa League. And I was reading an interview where he talked about studying N'Golo Kanté as somebody that he tries to model some of his game after. If he can represent even a portion of that, that I think that that would be very encouraging for Russia. Now, it all leads into this question of what needs to happen for them to go on a run, because I don't know how many people look at them right now and expect that from them. History is, by and large, on their side. Going on a run is relative. I think for Russia, getting out of the group would be considered a success.
Sure.
Only one host nation has ever not made it out of the group, which is, of course,
South Africa.
Very good. So history is on Russia's side, but I don't know. I mean, that's pretty, if I'm saying what needs to happen for them to go on a run, I guess the only thing I can really point to right now is the fact that they are at home, and by and large, this group is not overwhelmingly difficult.
Yeah, but that brings its added pressure, and you've asked what needs to happen for them to go on a run, and I've just put, they have to win their opening game. It's that simple. They get off to a bad start, the crowd turns, the doubts start to fester, and going into the second game, they're not in good shape.
Well, especially, too, because their opener, correct me if I'm wrong, is against Saudi Arabia,
that's
right?
That's the whole point.
And that's the one that you have to get the three points from.
I mean, by common consensus, that is the weakest team in this group, you would say. But Russia have done nothing. First of all, not having a qualification campaign is, I mean, it's obviously a byproduct of being the host nation, but when you saw them at the Confederations Cup last year, you thought lack of games is going to hurt this team.
And at the European Championships in 2016, where they were pretty poor. They drew with England, but then they were awful.
And by the way,
that,
they should never have drawn with England in that game. That was just ridiculous.
They were one, honestly, they were one of the worst teams, I thought, in the tournament.
Correct, and I totally agree with that. So they have to win their first game, get off to a good start, and try and build what we call momentum.
So a lot of what we're saying, this is sounding really negative, haven't even gotten to the negative part yet. So there's a lot of questions around this Russian team, and you look at what could possibly be their undoing if this all goes poorly. For me, it's one word, and it's injuries. They have been bitten by the injury bug in a way that not all that other many, the country that already probably suffers from a lack of depth. They've lost a lot of key players. Alexander Corcoran will miss out with an injury. He was going to kind of lead the line up front. You mentioned Fedor Smolov, who will probably now lead an attack with him out. Like you said, Smolov coming off three good seasons, 52 goals and 13 assists over the course of those seasons in 72 games. So he's, I think maybe Russian fans will feel somewhat at ease with that, but there's, it gets even more concerning when you look at their central defense. Both of what would have probably been their starting central defenders, Viktor Vasin and Georgi Djikaia, are both going to miss out with knee injuries. So it's already on to kind of the second unit at one of the most important positions for a team that's probably going to want to base what they do in defense.
I treated that question with total contempt because I don't think they're very good. I think creativity is a massive issue for them, but we'll get to that in the next question.
Well, yeah, and real quick, the thing for Russia, it's hard to know how good they are or how bad they are. We can go off of some of it with the Confederations Cup and the European Championships, but a lot of times we don't love doing that. We talk a lot about looking at how each of these guys perform domestically. And look, we're not sitting here on weekends watching many Russian Premier League matches. Here's the thing, though. The reason I say we don't know how good or bad they are, a lot of these guys who play in Russia are probably good enough to play elsewhere. But a lot of these clubs in Russia are very wealthy, and they happen to offer Russia's star players exorbitant sums of money to stay there.
Right.
So because these guys aren't testing themselves in other leagues that we're more familiar with, there's a bit of a mystery that surrounds them.
I hear what you're saying, but I still think we can extrapolate a lot from Euro 2016 and the Confederations Cup, even though I don't, you know my feelings about the Confederations Cup, but they did not impress me.
No, they didn't. According to the UEFA coefficient, by the way, you care to guess where the Russian Premier League ranks?
No, tell me.
Oh,
go on.
Okay. You just don't like playing along.
Just tell me.
Sixth.
All right.
That's about what you were, ahead of Portugal.
Well, see, the size of the nation, you would expect it to be.
Yeah. What's the X factor for Russia?
Well, you're going to roll your eyes. After everything I've just said, Yuri Zhirkov. Yeah, he's 34. Yeah, it's a decade since he made that Euro 2008. Team of the tournament. He only made 25 appearances across all competitions for Zenit last season, but he is in the preliminary squad and has the midfield versatility and creativity in a squad that I don't think has an awful lot of either of those factors. Andrew, if you look at the team selected for the Confederations Cup games last summer, which is what I'm basing a lot of my stuff on, he played left back and attacking left-sided central midfield in the Confederations Cup.
Weird.
In a Russian side that oscillated wildly in formations, as if someone was preparing for a tournament that you definitely have qualified for. I've always liked him. I thought his time as Chelsea was not great and probably unfairly cut short. But Zhirkov, I think, brings experience and maybe a little bit of guile.
Okay, so that's our look at the home nation of Russia. We move on now to Saudi Arabia. That's right. This is currently Saudi Arabia's number one viewed song on YouTube. You like it?
Oh, I can imagine. I'm there right now. I'm in Riyadh.
It's Rashed Al Majed. It's called Most People in the World.
I do. That's it. It's on my workout playlist.
So here we go.
This is, I'll tell you, this is one of those where you look at it and you see their squad and you're like, every one of these guys plays domestically.
It's time for us to pretend that we know things. You ready?
Yeah, half the world is doing it. Let's get involved.
Let's see. Some of the key players that people need to educate themselves on with Saudi Arabia, like what we have just done.
Mohammed Al-Shawali. 26 goals, 33 internationals. Back in March, it was reported by the Daily Mail he would train with Manchester United, part of a commercial deal, obviously, to get sharp for the World Cup, which pretty much is an admission that being based in the Saudi domestic league for Al Nassr isn't going to cut it for a World Cup. Yahya Al-Sheri and Salem Al-Daswari also have gained experience in La Liga, despite a lack of game time for Leganés and Villarreal. Those are your key players.
One of my favorite things about international soccer, like you have Wessy, right? Irish Messi.
Yeah.
Well, apparently Saudi Arabia has this as well.
Oh, you're stealing my thunder.
With Fahad Mossayed Al Muwallad.
No.
Who is referred to as the Saudi Messi.
Which is pressure already.
He's been on loan at Levante, but he's played just 10 minutes for them, which is a glimpse into something else that I'm going to talk about in just a little bit.
Okay.
The next question I have here, I'm going to be honest, what needs to happen for them to go on a run? I did not answer this question because I don't believe that a run is going to be coming from them.
I don't think there is either, but I mean, if I'm going to honestly answer it, I think a result in the first game, a draw.
What a disaster. We just talked about it, but can you imagine if Russia go up against Saudi Arabia?
Total. Like that's,
this is the one side in the group that Russia, you would think, has to be.
Embarrassment.
A fan base that is already a little bit uneasy, probably with their squad. Russia's got to win that game.
Yeah, so that's why I'm saying a draw would be good enough for Saudi Arabia to think they can pick up, at least give themselves a fighting chance in the group.
Now, in looking at some of the questions for the Saudi Arabian side and what could potentially be their undoing, there's one thing...
Being Saudi Arabia.
Well, yeah, but there's one thing even in particular that I look at with them, and it's real dysfunction from a managerial perspective. If you look at their qualifying campaign, started out with Bert van Marwijk. He got them to qualify, which for Saudi Arabia is hardly a thing that can be assumed going into World Cup qualifying. His contract was not renewed. I think he wanted more power in terms of being able to choose his own assistants, how the team was going to play, and I don't think the Saudi Arabian Federation was on board with all of that.
Okay.
So his contract was not renewed, despite the fact that he led them to qualify. Then Edgardo Bauza came in, but was fired after just three friendlies. And now it's Juan Antonio Pizzi leading the line for the Green Falcons, which is a cool name, nickname, by the way. But, of course, most of us will know Juan Antonio Pizzi from his time with Chile, where he did not get them to qualify for the World Cup. But he will still take part with Saudi Arabia. So their managerial situation coming into this has just been so much in flux. And you wonder if some of the uncertainty from different styles and things like that could rub off potentially on team selections, you know, how the team is going to play. So that's one thing that I will be looking at.
And that's, I suppose, the weeks leading into the tournament are going to be crucial to just establish that style of play. This is what we're doing for our three games and no more.
That's right. And now their X factor. I'm going to be honest. I have a lot here.
How have you a lot?
I have so many Saudi Arabian X factors.
You think you're better than me, don't you?
I think I'm better than everyone.
I'm going to go with the aforementioned Muwallad, who plays for Al Ittihad. Just let me... This is a tactical thing for me.
Yeah.
And I've watched the tape. I feel like Gruden. I've gone to the tape.
I'll tell you.
I've gone to the tape. This Muwallad lad, he's got a lot of potential.
Irish guy doing a John Gruden impression.
23 years old, right? Speedy winger in a team that's going to be sitting deep for most, if not all, of its games, I'm assuming. That makes him their potential X factor because that is both a release valve for the defense and also potential counter-attacking option. He's another of the Saudi Arabian's foreign exchange programs. You know, like you said, he went to Levante, got what, like 5 minutes?
10 minutes.
Ugh. Seriously, though. Check out his volley in qualifying versus the UAE. Andrew, it's not quite Van Basten against the Soviet Union in 88. What a strike it is. Ball over the top. He hits it first time on the full volley. That makes me think he's going to be player of the tournament. No.
Whoa!
No.
Wow, but, what a statement.
No, but it tells me he's capable. And he is going to do a lot of running in this team if they're going to sit deep like that.
I want to go a little bit deeper because this is kind of what I was looking at.
No, I go deeper.
No, on what you were just talking about and this this loan spell for Muwallad at Levante, because this was a theme for Saudi Arabia. They tried something different in preparation for this World
Cup. It's crazy though, isn't it?
And I make it my X factor because I don't know how this is going to go. And bear with me for a sec. Here's what they did. They sent a bunch of their key players, I think 9 in total, to different clubs all in Spain to try and gain valuable experience of playing against elite competition. But here was the problem. None of them played, like at all. So I don't know how this is going to go. Are they now coming into this tournament with fresh legs, or are they coming into it completely out of form? Did this backfire because they went there to gain valuable experience of playing against elite competition, but none of them played? Or is just the fact that they were playing against some good Spanish talent in their own training sessions enough of the experience gained from all of these various loan spells. So that's why it's my X factor, because we kind of have to wait and see how it goes before we judge how this experiment of sending all of these key players on loan, how this all went. This is from an article in The Guardian back in January when these nine transfers or these nine loan spells took place. Said, I'm reading now from the article. One leading Saudi official was scathing. They are not going to play at all, and that is going to be a problem at some point. Everyone knows Saudi players need to start going overseas, but this is not the way, nor is it the time. This is the middle of the season, and clubs are losing some of their best players. So this Saudi official was mad from a domestic league perspective. He was mad from the perspective of these players are not going to get the experience that some of these Saudi other Saudi officials think they're going to get.
Also,
I don't know, man. It's a really weird one.
What had to be foisted upon those Spanish teams to take them?
Well, that's like, another side effect of this.
That's not good. The integrity of the Saudi Arabian League struggles, and also the integrity of the Spanish teams that take them on a little bit, because there had to be cash or something.
Yes, I think that there were commercial incentives to this. Of
like the guy who shows up at Manchester United for training.
Spain has always, I think, been interested in capturing the attention of the Middle East.
No.
And so I think there was some of that going on here as well. But again, none of these guys played. So very, very unusual, the situation.
Red-faced Saudi officials.
Yeah.
How many minutes did he get at the weekend?
Oh, you know. Between zero
I'll
and
I'll tell
zero.
You what, though. His sitting posture on the bench, so good.
There's also one other thing with Saudi Arabia, and this doesn't affect just them. You know, a lot of players will be affected by this. Egypt will certainly be affected by this, and we'll talk about them. But this is also Ramadan is going on right now.
Right, yeah.
Where players are typically fasting
from sun up to sunset.
Right.
Which is a struggle for the regular 9-to-5 observer of the Islamic faith. What's it like for an athlete?
Guys training for a World Cup.
Crazy.
Now, I read this. This was in The National. This is an excerpt here. In the case of Saudi, while FA President Adel Izzat said the players had received special dispensation to postpone their fasts, several sources with the team suggested that they will fast intermittently whenever they can. Nick Wirth, a sports physiotherapist who has worked in the Premier League with Manchester City and Wigan, as well as in the UAE with Al Jazeera, said the concern with intermittent fasting is that the body never gets the chance to fully adapt. Doing it on an intermittent basis, the body never understands, whereas if you're fasting consistently, your body gets used to the energy and requirements and adapts. It's kind of an interesting one.
It is, and it makes me wonder ahead of the Champions League final and the World Cup about Mohamed Salah.
Yeah, him too. Now, before we move off of Saudi Arabia, one of the team's trainers said that Ramadan was going on during some of their most important qualifiers as well. We had talked about it with Mohamed Salah with some of the recent games for Liverpool. So these guys, I think, know how to handle this. And I don't foresee it as an issue, but I just thought it was, you know, with the World Cup coming, I thought it was kind of an interesting timing.
It is very interesting. And it's something that only really dawned on me recently when some of my Muslim friends told me, you know, Ramadan started.
Yeah. Yeah. So there you go. That was Saudi Arabia. We've done Russia, Saudi Arabia. JJ, we're halfway through this group. I promised that I was going to try to keep these things at a minimum, but
were you just starting to forget about the U.S. not qualifying for the World Cup? Well, it's time for another edition of Andrew Gundling Abruptly Brings Us Down.
Yeah, I can't help myself. How do you think the U.S. would have fared in this group, JJ?
Oh, my God. Can I just tell the listeners, I did not sign off on this segment.
Because I think we would have won it.
Oh, my God.
This has been Andrew Gundling Abruptly Brings Us Down.
We continue now.
No, hang on a second.
With Uruguay.
I crushed Stu Holden.
Or with Egypt, I'm sorry.
Stu Holden tried to pick a team that would have played in this World Cup.
For the U.S.
Yeah, he tried to pick the squad for this World Cup. Imagine it. You have taken it to another level.
I think we would have won the group. That's what I think. Egypt, you ready?
Yep.
And we move into Egypt with what is currently the most watched video on YouTube.
This is my favorite part.
It comes to us from Hamiza Namira. It's called Dari Ya Albi. Gotta say, I really am enjoying all the songs so far.
That actually one, that one has a nice kind of rhythm to it. I like the chorus.
I should say one thing about these songs, which I came to find out when I was going through Spain's number one song, which we'll get to in our Group B preview. I don't know that all of these are by, like, I don't know that Hamiza Namiria is an Egyptian artist.
But it doesn't matter.
But it's the number one song currently in terms of YouTube views in Egypt.
You know, if it was Pitbull, we'd have to play it.
No, you're right, though. So, yeah, I just want to throw that out there in case somebody who's Egyptian heard that and is like, hey, that guy's not Egyptian. But I don't know. Maybe he is, maybe he's not.
But you're loving it in Cairo.
You certainly are. People are just watching that video like crazy. So here we go. Egypt, for the who are their key players section, I literally wrote duh, because I'm clever.
I wrote Mohamed Salah, what's left to be said, Mohamed El Neni, Ahmed Higazi, Esalm El Hadri. And for different reasons, obviously, Mohamed Salah is obviously top of the pile there.
Yeah, we've talked so much about him that there's almost nothing left to say, except this. It's not just Liverpool where he's been phenomenal. He's actually been unbelievable for his country as well. 33 goals in 57 international appearances for Egypt. So going off of his history with the Egyptian side, there's no reason to believe that we're going to be getting a different Mohamed Salah at this World Cup than what we saw with Liverpool.
Well, obviously qualifying is a different thing, Andrew. I would put in the caveat that he does not have a Bobby Firmino nor a Sadio Mane in this side. But I agree with you, he is still crucial, absolutely central to what they're going to try to do. Because at some point, we know they've been compact in qualifying, we know they've been good defensively. At some point, they're going to have to score a goal.
Well, that's the thing, and that's what I have here for when we're talking about what needs to happen for them if they're going to go on a run. Like you say, with Salah, you think goals. That's what he provides. But it's actually defensively where they've experienced the majority of their success. In qualifying, they scored just 8 goals in 6 games, but still finished top of their group. In the Africa Cup of Nations, they were runners-up to Cameroon, but they scored 5 goals in 6 games. So over the course of 12 competitive games in qualifying and in this tournament, they conceded just 7 in those 12 games from both those things combined. So defensively, they're incredible. And that's what they're going to have to continue to be.
Which is amazing to talk about a West Brom centre-back in Higazi, who has been a linchpin of the defence. And in, you know, the way the final CAF group qualifying, they only conceded 4 goals, which is... Look, we're going to talk about him later, but it's kind of a hallmark of Hector Cooper, the manager. And that is going to be key as well. Here's my issue, if I can bring it up, while I talked about important players. Esam El Hadri, you talk about the defence. He's not guaranteed to be a starter, but if he is starting, he's going to be 45, making Mondragon at the last World Cup for Colombia look like a young fella. I mean... That's a worry for me.
Well, not only make him look like a young fella, it will set the new record.
Yeah.
Should he play for the oldest player to
which is interesting.
In
I'm not saying, look, again, I wouldn't have seen that much of him, but that is pretty exceptional to be at the peak of your powers playing in the biggest tournament in the world at 45.
Yeah, it's amazing. Is that what your undoing could be for them? You worry about their keeper?
It's part of it. It's part of it, yeah.
Yeah, for me, I mean, it's kind of like... Their success is going to have to revolve around Salah, but it's what you mentioned in that does he have the pieces around him to bring him into the game the way he does at Liverpool? Now, like I said before, I think there's enough, and I think he's gifted enough on his own, and I think he happens to be in a group where he could thrive because between Russia and Saudi Arabia, well, we'll get to our predictions later, but I wouldn't slag off Egypt in this group.
No, and just talking about El Neni, I think he's going to be crucial because whatever you think about his Arsenal form, if there's going to be a launch pad for a counter-attack, again, I expect them to absorb a lot of pressure, to be tight, to be compact, to be all those things that, you know, a nation like them, due respect, a minnow, have to be. His ability to launch them on counter-attacks, win possession and screen that defence is a huge responsibility. Now, Andrew, I know he's recovered, but a bad ankle injury. Say El Neni's not 100%. That is going to adversely affect the supply line to someone like Salah. And then you wonder what Egypt will be.
Yep, you're definitely right. In terms of an X factor for them, You kind of mentioned it already. Their defense being what it is, I looked at guys like Hegazi of West Brom and El Mohammadi, who, by the way, has a pretty important game coming up this weekend for Aston Villa, who we were just talking about the important role that El Mohammadi has played for that Villain side. When Steve Bruce was saying, you know, his leadership along with John Terry, I'm sure he provides the same sense of leadership for this Egyptian side too. So Egypt is interesting because they kind of had a meteoric rise over the last few years or so. And it's now, we don't like the term golden generation, but it's crystallizing. And they've been so good in Africa. And now they're going to have a chance to prove it on a world stage at this World Cup. And finally, you good with Egypt?
Yeah, I was just going to say Hector Cooper is a wily old fox, one-time European Coach of the Year, someone that I grew up watching in that famous Valencia team that lost successive back-to-back Champions Leagues at the start of the noughties. Mm. His experience is going to be vital too.
So there you go. That is Egypt. We move on now to the final team in this group and probably the best team, at least on paper, in this group. It is Uruguay, and they bring us in with Te Bote by Neo Garcia and Shorty C. This is the number one song in Uruguay on Spotify. Kind of like the hook there. Here we go, Uruguay.
That's my least favorite of the songs.
All right. That's very nice. Let's see. Uruguay, of course, the key players, your eyes can't help but go straight up front to Suarez and Cavani.
I said Suarez, Cavani, Godin, and such it has been since 2010. They are the spine of this team, and that is both good and, I guess, bad in a way, which we'll probably talk about.
Well, Suarez and Cavani are going to be leaned on, and they were in qualifying where Uruguay were pretty good. They scored 32 goals during the really strenuous CONMEBOL qualifying campaign. That was five more than any other side, excluding Brazil, who were
Ran away with it, yeah.
And, of course, you know, Suarez and Cavani are at the center of that. Look, Suarez is the weird one because if you're making like a specific prediction for this World Cup, do you think he'll be involved in some other controversy? In 2010, he had the crazy handball against Ghana. Obviously, in 2014, he had the bite against Chiellini. Do you think he's somebody who just the pressure of these World Cup moments for his country is just going to lead him to do something bonkers again?
My concern is that it will, and it's due to a frustration through a lack of supply where things aren't going the way they want them to go. But my concern for this team is the midfield.
Okay.
The link to supply Cavani and Suarez to make things tick. Now, I will talk about my X factor, but I don't know if he's going to bite someone. I don't know. controversy. Is he going to get upset and frustrated? He's a demonstrative player, definitely.
Yeah.
There's going to be some of that.
Well, here's my thing. In order for them to go on a run, my thing is this. I'm almost looking past this group.
Because you're...
Look, let's be honest. They got a sweet draw here.
Yeah.
With this.
And they deserve it considering the absolute torture of South American qualifying.
But the thing for them is, there can be no slip up in this group stage. And by that, I don't even necessarily mean like not getting out of it. I mean, they can't finish second in this group. They've got to win this group, because if they don't, more likely than not, if they finish second, the way the tournament is formatted, they'll probably be playing Spain in the round of 16. And if Uruguay go out in the round of 16, I think a lot of Uruguayan fans would consider this tournament somewhat disappointing. So they got to win this group and try to avoid Spain as long as possible. And they need that, I think, to go on a run.
And Uruguayan fans realize that Cavani and Suarez have now entered their 30s, and they really want to see, I'm not using the term golden generation, but they want to see the fruits of these top players right now. And it would be a huge disappointment for them to not get further than... But they want to get out of the group in the last 16. They want a little bit of a run.
I think so. I think so, too. And you mentioned him, but Diego Godin and also Jose Maria Jimenez, they've been such a successful pairing at Atletico Madrid. They've been that at Uruguay. I would expect that to continue. By the way, unrelated, kind of, Diego Godin, do you think that he is kind of from the school of, like, Arjen Robben in that he's looked 40 since he was 20.
Yeah, definitely. He has a face chiseled out of granite.
He's looked old forever.
Yeah.
And he's not that old.
And he always seems to look, even at the start of the game, like it's the end of the game. He looks like kind of slightly disheveled.
Yeah. Are there other, because for me, Arjen Robben was always that. I thought when he was like 22 years old that he was in his late 30s. Can you think of any other guys like that that just like look really old?
Yap Stam.
Okay. I always thought John Terry, see, he's funny because when he was in his early 20s, I thought he looked like he was in his mid 30s, but he hasn't aged.
No, he's paused. From that point. He's in stasis.
Yeah. So he's someone that I would throw in there. I'm going to try.
Yeah, you put me on the spot. You should have teed me up. I could have given you a list of them.
So these things just hit me. There can be no way of knowing sometimes where these conversations go.
Iniesta comes into that a little bit as well.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good call. I mean, premature baldness will do that. That was what happened with Robin. Let's see. We continue with Uruguay. What are your... you have X factors?
I have an X factor for them because I've said that the midfield is problematic. But there are some young players coming into the fold that could do something. And for me, Jorginho de Arrascaeta from Cruzeiro, who plays in Brazil, 23 years of age, in the 26-man preliminary squad, and a player who could be vital to the supply line of the front two. He's got a trick in him, Andrew. He's got a goal in him. I've never seen a player who loves a nutmeg more than him. And I look at that midfield and I think it needs creativity, and he could be someone that could provide it. So I'm putting him down as my X factor. I will say this. I have largely seen him through Cruzeiro YouTube videos. And the thing about YouTube is that the most you get from a YouTube video of a player is not the player itself. It's the soundtrack that someone's had to put over it. You usually get a large selection of EDM music that accompanies these players.
YouTube videos are tricky. I'll have more on that in our Group B podcast.
Okay.
Let's see. My X factor. This is totally selfish and may not come to any sort of fruition, but did you happen to see who was included on Uruguay's preliminary roster?
I did.
A little fella named Nico Lodero.
Yeah, but he's injured.
The Seattle Sounders. Well, that's the problem, and that's why I have this as an X factor.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Because they have until June 4th to decide. The Sounders are being totally supportive of Lodero and his hope of getting onto this World Cup roster for Uruguay. But, yes, the fact that he's missed Seattle's last three games, we don't know when he'll be back. If there's any question about his fitness, he's probably not going to make it. But I'm really, really rooting for him because he's been such a pleasure to watch in MLS. And I think it sends a nice message for MLS. If guys from prominent South American footballing nations come to this league, get better, and then it's recognized by the league. Basically, like,
More prominent than like Panama or Costa Rica.
But like all of the things that Italy refused to do with Giovinco.
Oh,
like,
here we go.
No, and I'm not saying that Italy is wrong.
Well, why don't you love me?
But like Giovinco came to the U.S., was a superstar here in MLS, but Italy refused to acknowledge it.
Right.
I think it would be nice to see a country like Uruguay acknowledge it and bring Lodero in, and then I would love to see if he could do something for them. But yes, like you said, his injury pops up at the worst possible time.
Can I put in one more name there? I know I went for the sexy hipster option with De Arrascaeta, who actually is part Italian as well. His last name is Benedetti. Juventus, Rodrigo Bentancur. Okay, not a starter at Juventus, but still an established name in their squad. I think he's somebody who could be crucial to a midfield that I'm not very impressed with.
There you go. Let's see. Before we get out, just a couple things left. You are going to be doing this for each of our groups, where what we have here, I've got our wheel. Remember the wheel?
Yeah.
I went into the Caught Offside closet. That is a room, and that is what we refer to it as.
Dusted off the wheel.
Yeah, found the wheel and replaced it. And we'll do this for each group. We'll put the four teams from each group. We'll spin that wheel. And then whoever it lands on, we have a blast from the past, a World Cup blast from the past that you've selected for each of these teams. And whoever it lands on will play that one. Are you ready to do that for this group here?
I'm excited.
Here we go. Let's give it a spin. And it lands on Saudi Arabia.
Saeed Al-Orian, Maisy dribble in America against Belgium. RFK Stadium, USA, 1994. Voted FIFA's sixth greatest World Cup goal of all time.
And again, the Saudis break very sharply. What a terrific run this is. Wonderful piece of football. He's still in here. Oh, that's the greatest goal of the tournament.
It sure was. It's an unbelievable goal.
Yeah. I remember it well. And his career went a bit strange afterwards. He like got a Rolls Royce from the Saudi royal family. He was treated as a god. Ended up in prison. So, don't score against Belgium.
Right.
Is the moral.
Now it's you bringing us down. Let's see. We're also going to take mailbags for each group. We'll do group specific.
Yeah, and I've messed it up already.
Oh, that's just wonderful.
We have a mailbag for Group A. So let's begin it. William Locke says, Russia gets through, hashtag hot take. So there you go. KMD De Niro, he's issued some wild statements because I did ask for them. Egypt will win Group A.
Okay.
All right. At ES Wald 11, Egypt will dominate with Salah. Russia will be a contender. Okay. And at KNCRW 49, Group A, Uruguay and Egypt to go through. So those are some of the thoughts of the Cut Off Side listeners.
And that leads us to our predictions for the group. I'm going to go first. I'm going total chalk here. At least, maybe not, I don't know, as I perceive it. I went Uruguay and Egypt to go through, Russia finishes third, and Saudi Arabia finishes last. I don't think Saudi Arabia will get a point. How about that? I guess that's my hot take. But Uruguay and Egypt are the two that I see coming out of this group.
Yeah, I'm not going to deviate from that. That's exactly what I think as well, which is, I mean, kind of sad for the Russian team, but I expect them to finish third, and Saudi Arabia dead last.
Yep. The thing that I guess just... my overarching thing from Group A that I'm most excited about. Obviously, it's always exciting seeing the home nation. Look, I know it's Russia and the U.S. and Russia are supposed to be these fierce enemies, but it's always fun to watch the home fans really get behind their country. That would be fun to see.
You're thinking of South Korea in 2002.
Oh, man.
What's it going to take for Russia to have a run like that?
That was really... Like that, you're right. That is the one that I think of when you think of just like these epic runs. That goal scored against Italy, the penalty shootout against Spain. But we'll get to that, I guess, when we get to South Korea.
Before we get best kit in this group is a category that I've made up on the spot.
Let's see. I'm trying to remember off the top of my head. Now, here's what I do remember. I remember when we talked about our World Cup kits, not liking Russia's, both their home and away kits. So I know that. Thinking about it now, I think I might say Egypt.
Those colours do work well together, but I'm going to go in a different direction. I'm going to say the away kit, the second kit of Uruguay, the white jersey.
Okay.
I like that a lot.
All right, there you go. Hey, my most excited, Mo Salah. The season that he's coming off of for Liverpool, I can't wait to see if he's able to replicate it at the greatest stage possible in this tournament.
You'll forgive me if I hope he saves much of his vigor for one game in particular prior to the World Cup.
So you're that selfish with all he has given you that you're actually rooting against him in this tournament. That's disgusting.
We're going for six, baby.
That is disgusting. You are not a good guy. And people think you are, but you're not.
You know the truth of me.
Well, that was fun, man. That's it. We are underway. The World Cup. Our first group preview in the books. Group B will be coming up probably tomorrow. So keep your eyes open around the same time that this one was released, kind of midday on Thursday. And we will keep running through this. Of course, you can tweet us all of your thoughts on these groups. Like I said, we'll be soliciting your messages for group-specific mailbags. At CO Soccer Pod on Twitter is probably the best way to get us. There you go, man.
That was
feeling
fun.
Good? Oh, feeling good.
Yeah,
you're feeling ready.
I'm just delighted it's underway because me with predictions, I'm never confident in anything I have to say about them because it's just it's a spin of the wheel.
It sure is. Hey, this was fun, man. To you, I say.
Take you later, fun boy.
I'll see you.
Take care.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.